So welcome to this class, which is about the BBC, and we just listened to that song by Mitch Benn. And most of it is just a list of programmes from today, or 10 years ago, or 20 years ago, or 30 years ago, or the whole lot of them. And then you have the chorus, and this is quite interesting. Kia, can you read that? What, how do I get this to be bigger? Yes, there you go. Yeah, I'm proud of the BBC. It's part of you and it's part of Whitby. Par contre, c'est des gens qui ont écrit les paroles et qui sont fait des erreurs. Enfin, c'est marqué. It's not just lousy weather that keeps us together. C'est pas seulement le temps pourri dans notre pays qui nous unit. La BBC nous unit aussi. So you can see it's very British. Yeah, it's always a joke. I'm proud of the BBC. It's not too slick. C'est pas très pro quelque part, c'est un peu bricolé. Yeah, it's not too slick, but it was never supposed to be. It's comfort and inspiration for the nation. Okay, so I just wanted to start with that because the BBC has, after 100 years, has remained very popular. And it's not so easy to be popular these days. So I'm going to present to you now some aspects of the history of the BBC, and under the title of BBC 100 Years of Public Service. And so I'm going to look at the question, what does that mean, television and radio? Now, for most of its history, the BBC was radio, only radio. Because although the television began in 1936, but in 1936, when the television began, there were 2,000 televisions. That's all. So it was just a little experimental thing on a screen this size, with in black and white, in bad quality. So when the television began, most people on the radio thought, it's not it will never work. Look at it, it's a bit this big, and you can hardly see it. So radio was extremely important, and then after the 1950s, then television became very important as well. But radio is still important in some ways, because there's some things you can do with radio you can't do with television. So I'm going to look at history of public service, and I have some notes here so that I know what to say to you. So here I even have a structure. Vous avez vu ça? Une structure en quatre parties. On dirait que je suis en train de devenir français, non? Structurer des trucs. Okay, so first of all, in the introduction, is going to be, what is public service? Yeah, what does that mean? Number two, then the next part is chronological. First of all, John Rees and public service in the last days of deference. So what does that mean? John Rees was the founder of the BBC, the first director general, and he was a hero of the BBC, if you like. He was the guy who established the BBC. So he invented many, many things about the BBC. There were no rules. Nobody had done it before. He did this is in the 1920s and 1930s. The 1920s and the 1930s. And I've called them the last days of deference. The 1920s and 1930s, because this is the time when the class hierarchy culturally was very, very rigid. The general opinion was that, oh yeah, well, the people at the top of society are better. And then the people at the bottom are not very good. It was not very much a democratic spirit. It was deference. Now, after the Second World War, public service in the boom after the People's War. In French, you have this wonderful expression, les Trente Glorieuses. Et on en a un peu marre parce qu'on entend tout le temps, but it's actually quite a reasonable description. Suddenly, I'm talking about Britain, suddenly the hospitals were free. The dentists were free. People didn't believe it. But when my grandmother was bringing up her children in the 1920s. Was she bringing up her children? Yes. Yeah, when she was around in the 1920s, if your child was ill, you phoned a doctor. if an adult was ill, you didn't phone a doctor. Too much money, yeah? If your child was ill, you called the doctor, of course. And, you know, perhaps you didn't have enough to eat that week, but you called the doctor. It was expensive, the doctor. And so the boom, we call it the post-war boom, and you call it les Trente Glorieuses, was really very, very impressive, yeah? Suddenly, yeah, free secondary education till the age of 16, free hospitals, free doctors. It seemed very impressive. So this is after the People's War. That's what we sometimes call the Second World War. Welcome back. The public service in the boom. Number three, the neoliberal age. This is after Margaret Thatcher, the 1980s, 1990s, until today. We're still in the neoliberal age. I mean, of course, there is no precise division, but, you know, the neoliberal age. And the momentum, the energy of, one, social justice. There has been good news. There has been some progress. Yeah. I remember the 1970s. It was very. It was much worse. It really was much worse, especially for gays. But you know, in general, and technological change. And then finally, I want to say something about today and public service science programming, and also the pressure on the BBC today. Now, of course, this is 100 years, so I am simplifying very much. So first of all, what is public service? Well, the BBC is contradictory. It does not speak with one voice, and it does not act with one will. And this is not surprising. Any big historical organisation which lasts 100 years and influences millions of people is always contradictory. The Catholic Church, the education system, all the big institutions which last a long time, they always have contradictory elements. It's not possible otherwise. And the BBC is a great organisation which has lasted 100 years through the wars, through social change, and it has always been popular with the British people. What's more, it has never made governments sufficiently angry for the governments to abolish it. Yeah. The government can abolish the BBC tomorrow. Quite tomorrow. Every 10 years, the BBC signs a contract with the government. Okay, you are the BBC for 10 more years. There is no guarantee that it will continue. And it's quite surprising, in a way, that it has continued such a long time. Margaret Thatcher, for example, she wanted to privatise the BBC. Because, as you know, perhaps you remember, Margaret Thatcher's politics were private is better. Privatisation is good, private is better. But it was politically impossible to privatise the BBC. The BBC was too popular, even among Conservative voters. Now, the situation today is more complicated because today, if I want to listen or watch, I have a choice. Yeah, Netflix, Amazon Prime, the BBC, okay. Video in demand. And so, obviously, today, the BBC is important, but not so central. Before the internet, you know, it was a really huge thing, and it had a very different role in society. In the 1960s, when you went to school, if you watched something on the BBC last night, half of everybody in the room had watched the same thing as you. And so when you got a new film or a new series, everybody was talking about the same thing. And we can't do that in the same way now because you all watched something different last night because there's so much choice. Yeah? And so it really had a huge effect. The BBC certainly was certainly has been very well adapted. Even today, when they do opinion polls, 61% of the British population have a positive opinion of the BBC. Yeah, 61% of the British population have a positive opinion of the BBC. That's not so bad. It's more than Emmanuel Macron. Okay. And 90% of the British population use the BBC at least once a week. And I will show you, I intend to show you, that the BBC produces, provides a contribution which cannot be provided elsewhere. Now, last year, this new history of the BBC was brought out, quite successful. Look, the Times top 10 bestseller. D'accord, the Times c'est un peu antelou quand même. Et ça fait 600 pages. But it sold some. This is David Hendy, and he wrote this this book, The BBC, A People's History. You could say Une histoire populaire de la BBC. And in this book, he particularly, well, he looks at the big history of the BBC, but he always says, okay, so what was life like for women in the BBC? You know, some of the people we don't talk about as much. What did the BBC produce for black people in Britain? Some of these questions he brings to mind. No, he doesn't only talk about that, but that's the reason why he calls it a people's history. It's like an inclusive history. Very good it is too. And this is what he writes about it. He writes, the status of the BBC as a lofty national body in close embrace with the world of high politics has always coexisted with a cradle-to-grave role in our own domestic lives and emotional landscapes. Ouf. On est d'accord. Vous alliez le dire, non? Vous étiez sur le point de le dire. Je vais essayer de traduire. La situation de la BBC en tant qu'organisme national des hautes sphères, très proche de du monde de la haute politique, cette situation-là, a toujours existé en même temps qu'un rôle sur toute la durée de notre vie, dans nos vies domestiques et nos paysages émotionnels. So he's trying to say that it's true that the BBC is very important to the government and was very important to the British Empire, but it's also there's something very personal about our relationship with the television programmes, especially of our childhood. And you see this in France as well, of course. People get nostalgic about the programmes they used to watch when they were a teenager. Now, this is not very long ago for you guys, but people do get nostalgic about that, or even children's programmes. So this is what David Hendy said about it, and it's a little bit the same as what Mitch Benn was saying in the song. I'm proud of the BBC. It's part of you, and it's part of me. So this is an interesting idea. The media, we often imagine the media as outside us or even putting content onto us, but you know, perhaps it becomes part of our emotional lives. Okay, so we have the BBC 100 years, 4 million hours of programs, a worldwide reputation. So how is it possible to give you a history of the BBC? 4 million hours of programmes. I have not seen them all. Yeah? That's true. It's too long. So I'm going to simplify the situation. I'm going to talk about public service and not any other question. But I'm going to talk about public service in the three periods. Before the Second World War, in the boom years, and in the, I am ill, but I tested negative for COVID this morning, okay? So it's just a cold, you're safe, okay? And then today. And I want to avoid some of the mistakes which people sometimes make, especially in Britain. Sometimes when people talk about the BBC, they talk about the BBC News, the BBC documentaries, especially the current affairs documentaries, and that's all. And so they look at the BBC very politically. Does the BBC always support the government? Etc. Now, this is very interesting, but of course, most of the BBC is not news and is not current affairs documentary. It's very, very varied. Sport and cooking and dancing and drama and comedy and music and so on and so forth. So I'm going to try to look at all that together. But before we go any further, I'm going to try... Vous suivez à peu près? Là, ça va? Je veux pas le faire trop dur pour vous, mais je veux pas trop ralentir et vous parler comme à la maternelle. Ok, parce que c'est pas gentil. Ok, j'essaie de me rappeler quel est le niveau L2 qu'il faut parler. Ok, public service. The problem with the expression public service is it's, you know, what exactly does that mean? Who is the public and how do you serve them? Does a public service broadcaster serve the state? Defend the British Empire? Defend the Britain at war? And defend British diplomatic objectives? Perhaps. Does the BBC serve the government? You know, make sure you present the government ministers in a positive light. Make sure you make documentaries about the questions which the government think are important. Maybe. And there are three more there. Serving, does public service serve consumers? Is it giving people what they want? Does public service serve citizens? Is it trying to make people grow? To make people well-informed and well-rounded? And finally, does the BBC serve the people against the elites? Is this possible? Sometimes. So let's have a look in more detail. Is the public service at the service? Is the BBC at the service of the state, defending Britain against foreign enemies, defending the British state against domestic revolts? Is it a place where you can find propaganda? Vous verrez que je vais ouvrir plus de questions que je ferme, mais c'est normal, c'est ça que font les historiens. Ils sont énervants. As we shall see. When there is occasional mass revolt, for example, in 1926 there was a general strike, and in 1984, as Leah mentioned, there was the big miners' strike. And it's true, the BBC was against the strikers, no problem, defending the state, defending the police in every case. Also, before the Second World War, the BBC solidly defended the Empire, defended the British Empire, against those people who wanted to decolonialization. One more example. Perhaps you noticed, spoiler if you didn't notice, Queen Elizabeth died recently. Yeah? Oh my God. Oh, no. Oh, I'm so sorry. So Queen Elizabeth died recently. And the BBC went mad. There were hundreds of hours of programmes about how wonderful the royal family was, hundreds of hours. Now, in fact, today in Britain, 22% of the population are strongly opposed to the monarchy. It's a minority, 22%, and 18% are not sure. Whereas, let me get this right, 60% are in favour. However, on the BBC, it was 100% in favour. And so, in this case, I think it's fair to say that the BBC was supporting the state, supporting the status quo, if you like, and we will see it again when King Charles gets his new hat in May. He gets a new hat. It's a magic hat. Incidentally, did you know that King Charles is coming to Paris tomorrow? No, not tomorrow, next Monday. Next Monday. And he didn't even phone me up. He didn't even tell me, it's terrible. Now what is a little bit bizarre is, okay, the BBC is obsessed by the monarchy, which I consider to be unfortunate, but inevitable. But the French television is obsessed by the British monarchy. That I just don't understand. It's just bizarre. It's just bizarre. So, number two. Is the public service, is the BBC at the service of the government? How far can the government control the BBC? The BBC does not belong directly to the government. The government does not phone the BBC and say, you know that programme you're putting on tonight? Don't put it on tonight. They never do that. The government does not intervene in the day-to-day management of the BBC. However, every 10 years, the BBC has to say to the government, number one, please give me a new contract so I can continue being the BBC. Number two, can we have some more money? The government decides every 10 years, will the BBC continue? And the government decides how much money they will have. So we're not surprised when the BBC is going to be very careful about making the government very angry. Comme vous, si vous dépendez financièrement de vos parents, vous essayez d'être un peu poli de temps en autre. Non? Non, même pas. C'est la nouvelle génération. C'est terrible. Tout se casse la gueule. Okay. Now, how does the BBC get its money? Notice, number one, there is no advertising on the BBC in Britain. There is never advertising on the BBC in Britain. Now, if you see advertising on the BBC, there is occasionally advertising on BBC programmes for France or for another country. But in Britain, there is no advertising. So that's good for the viewer and listener, but of course, BBC don't get any money. How does the BBC make money? Number one, the licence fee. Il y avait ça en France aussi, mais ça a disparu. Je perds le mot là en français pour la license fee. Ce qu'on payait pour la télévision chaque année jusqu'à tout récemment. La redevance. La redevance. Ça n'existe plus, hein, mais c'est tout récent. Hein. So the BBC gets money because every family, every household which has a television or a television, and before in the past a radio, today radios are free, but television, must pay every year. I don't know how much it is right now. It's like 200 euros, something like that. However, the problem for the BBC is that the government decides how much. So, yes, they don't want to make the government too unhappy. The second source of income from the BBC is that they sell a lot of programmes to other countries. This is big money. The BBC has a very good reputation. If you knock on the door of the television station in Kenya or Colombia and say, I have a program for you. I want to sell this program for you. They say, well, we've got lots of programs. But if you say, I am the BBC and I want to sell you a program. So, oh, well, okay, I'll look at it. Yeah, it really does have a very good reputation. Sometimes deserved. Certainly I will be showing you that on the... you see this also on French television, that sometimes you see a good science documentary or a good history documentary. It's the BBC. Yeah. Not always, but for a small country, England produces something really quite impressive. So that's how they make the money. So, most of their money does depend on the government because the government decides the level of the licence fee. So the BBC has to be careful. So the BBC is not controlled in an everyday manner by the government, but they must be careful. Sometimes the government has been very angry with the BBC. I will give you some examples next week, some moments when the BBC has been very angry with the BBC. Margaret Thatcher was very angry with the BBC at one point. However, these are exceptional moments. Normally, the BBC keeps the government happy. And number three, so how about the consumers? Does the BBC respond to the needs of a market, just in the way a private company does? For example, if you are Supermarché U, You try to put out products that people want. And you try, and you study people and say, what do they want? And in this way, you stop people going to Lidl or Monoprix. Does the BBC work like that? Does it have to give people what they want? Well, yes and no. The BBC has a great advantage. If you run a private radio station, literally, your big advertisers will phone you up and say, I saw that last week the number of listeners was down here. Take that program off and put on another program with more listeners. Yeah? From day to day, the advertisers can tell you if you're a private. This is an advantage for the BBC. They're not directly controlled from day to day by the number of people, the number of viewers and listeners. However, this means that they can afford to put on some programs which are not very popular, or which are not yet very popular. You know, they can take risks more easily, and I will show you some examples. Public service broadcasters can take more risks. They can try to. They can try to create an audience. I will give you lots of examples of this. However, if the number of people watching and listening to the BBC keeps going down, it becomes a big problem, because the electors say to the government, you make us pay this money to the BBC and we don't want to watch it. Yeah? You're wasting public money. And so the BBC, like I say, they have more space than the private sector, but they still have to have a lot of popular programs. And so they are in competition with the private channels. Now, they're not in day-to-day competition, but they're in year-to-year competition. One of the big examples is, perhaps you know, that one of the most popular television programs in Britain is Coronation Street. It's a soap opera. It's a sentimental series about every life. Extremely popular. And this is on the private television. This is on the independent television, ITV. In the 1990s, the BBC said, we're going to make a programme to compete. And they made EastEnders, which is another extremely popular soap opera about everyday life. And so the BBC must compete, but not exactly in the same way that a private company does. The BBC, so if the number of viewers and listeners is steadily decreasing, the political pressure on the government to get rid of the BBC, to privatise the BBC, will increase. The BBC needs to be seen to produce a good deal of popular programming. I have two more. Serving citizens, then. Is the public service broadcasting the BBC, is it supposed to educate people? Widen their horizons, give them new things to think about and new things to enjoy. So this is not the same as the consumer, because the consumer, you say, what do you want? I will give it you. You're a consumer. Yeah, what do you want? I'll give it you. Pay me. That's consumers. Thinking about people as a citizen is, well, you know, we think it would be good, you know, if the British population understood this better. So let's produce educational programmes which are attractive, because otherwise people won't watch them. Yeah? Now, this is the idea of the citizen and popular education. Should the BBC nourish the education of individuals who wish to be conscious and informed actors of their time, or who aim to become fulfilled modern humans through the widest possible access to culture? And the very last possibility, can the BBC be part of the fight for social justice against the elite? Can it be for the people? So, as you know, over the last 50 years, there's been big changes. Things are better for women. Things are better for gays. Things are better for people targeted by racism. There's a long way to go, but things are definitely better. Did the BBC help this progress, or on the contrary, was the BBC conservative and holding it back? I'm going to look at some of these questions. Can public service broadcasting serve the people rather than the elites? Can it have a healthily subversive role, providing the information and moral support that can advance a collective battle to improve society and build social justice? In the very real, if limited, advances made over the century against racism, sexism, homophobia, class elitism, has the BBC led, or has the BBC followed the fight, or has the BBC been solidly part of the establishment trying to stop change? Vous saurez la semaine prochaine. Okay. Merci beaucoup d'avoir bien écouté.